all these pieces of paper. Good morning and welcome. As Paul says, congratulations for everyone managing to brave the snow. I don't know whether I predicted snow or not. I was saying to Paul yesterday morning, I had this most peculiar dream Friday night that we turned up for church and there was just no one here. So I'm so glad that wasn't a prophetic one. It must have just been the cheese I'd eaten or something like that. It's great to see you. A few years ago, I was driving home with Jess in the car and I turned into the road that we lived in and stopped really promptly because there was a great big white van blocking the road as I was driving into our street. And then suddenly this van went into reverse and came flying back towards me and crashed into the front of my car. It was such a nasty scrunch that the insurers wrote the car off. Not such a good thing, because we didn't get very much for it. It was a fairly old car, so it was a frustratingly expensive bump. The driver admitted fault at the time, and it was his fault. But later that evening, when the owner of the van turned up at our house, he just happened to be the son of the gentleman that had been driving the van, the owner claimed that I had been moving at the time of impact and fabricated a witness to that effect. It was, again, infuriating. But what was more infuriating than the cost of the accident and the lies around this accident was that the driver of the van lived three doors up on the opposite side of my road. I had taken a funeral for the grandma of the woman that lived opposite him, and I had taken a funeral for the husband of a woman that lived further down our street. There was a family that lived not that far up the road from this gentleman. Not only had we supported them with financial gifts from the church, and we married them, we'd also helped keep the chap out of prison. Our community larder had given food to people in our street, and our debt advice centre had helped people, including his own next-door neighbour, whose house was under risk of being repossessed. I considered those who lived in my street part of my community, and I had expected someone living in that community, living in that street, to consider me as one of their own. Do you know, it is really challenging when people in our community let us down, or they oppose us, or they work in some way against what we're trying to do. It can be tough in the workplace when customers or even other departments in the company we work for are doing something that seem to be opposing what we're doing. But it is so much worse when that opposition comes from within our own team. It's challenging in families. You know, there's a lot of opposition around us, but when those within our family turn against us, it is extremely painful and hard. And so it is also like that in the church context too. You know, we expect criticism and opposition from outside of the church. But when it happens within the worshiping community, it's extremely painful to us. And it's disturbing for us to watch when Christians are at loggerheads with each other rather than coming to a place of peaceful reconciliation. Last week, when Peter took us through the story of Nehemiah, he told us about the threat that was coming from outside of the city walls, outside of Jerusalem. There he talked about the bullies who first ridiculed the Jews and then threatened the Jews. But this morning, we're going to look at how Nehemiah responds when the opposition comes from within the worshiping community, within the Jewish community, within those city walls. And Nehemiah tells us it makes his blood boil. He says, some of the men and their wives complained about the Jews in power and said, we have large families and it takes a lot of grain merely to keep them alive. Others said, during the famine, we even had to mortgage our fields, vineyards and homes to them in order to buy grain. Then others said, we had to borrow money from those in power to pay the government tax on our fields and vineyards. We're Jews just as they are, and our children are as good as theirs, but we still have to sell our children as slaves, and some of our daughters have already been raped. We're completely helpless. Our fields and vineyards have been taken from us. Nehemiah says, when I heard their complaints and their charges, I became very angry. Nehemiah was angry because the richer Jews weren't helping the poorer Jews. The rich were exploiting the poor, and they were profiting from this exploitation, and this was wrong. And Nehemiah tells them so. This is wrong. He says, when I heard their complaints and their charges, I became very angry. So I thought it over and I said to these leaders and officials, how can you charge your people interest? Then I called a public meeting and accused the leaders by saying, we've tried to buy back all of our people who were sold into exile, but here you are selling more of them for us to buy back. The officials and the leaders did not say a word because they knew it was true. Nehemiah says, I continued, what you have done is wrong. We must honor God by the way we live so the Gentiles can't find fault with us. My relatives, my friends and I are also lending money and grain, but we must no longer demand payment in return. Now give back the fields, the vineyards, the olive orchards and the houses you've taken, and also the interest you've been paid. For Nehemiah, this was a huge test of his leadership. I wonder whether there is any greater test for a leader when he finds or she finds those in their own organization are working against them. A leader's emotions and confidence are challenged, never challenged as greatly as when there's opposition from within the community that they're leading, because it feels like such a betrayal. And so it becomes a test of that person's emotions and the way their heart is given and the way their whole demeanor is set before that challenge. The author The author John White, who has written about Christian leaders in a book called Excellence in Leadership, says, no test of leadership is more revealing than the test of opposition. Christian leaders can go to pieces under such pressure. Some grow too discouraged to continue. Others build a wall around themselves and shoot murderously from behind them. They become embattled, embittered, and vindictive. And although these comments are directly written by him towards church leaders, actually they're true for any one of us that find ourselves in a leadership position or in a position where we are influential within a community. Opposition is testing because it leaves us feeling exposed. And when those we expect to be there for us are found to be against us, we can feel extremely alone. But Nehemiah didn't go to pieces under the pressure. He didn't become too discouraged to continue. He didn't build a wall around him and kind of throw out that murderous shooting arrows from behind it. He didn't become embattled. He didn't become embittered. And he didn't become vindictive. Nehemiah stayed strong because no matter what it felt like in the moment, he knew he wasn't alone. And if you remember, right at the very beginning of our teaching series, we discovered in that opening talk around Nehemiah, Nehemiah had a very strong and a solid dependence on God. He had a strong and solid dependence on the divine. And this is the strength that every Christian leader, every Christian person of influence needs to know when they are being opposed. It's the strength that every Christian in the workplace needs to feel when they are being challenged and they feel that their own are working against them. It's the strength that every parent, every child, every husband, every wife, every friend needs when they feel opposition from within their own family or their own social network. Even in the face of the very worst opposition we can imagine, our strength comes from knowing that God is with us. We're not alone. But in those circumstances, like Nehemiah, we also need to take action. So how does Nehemiah ace it, to use a nice young expression? Nehemiah was angry. He was angry at the way the poor were being exploited. He was angry at the hypocrisy of the rich. He was angry at the waste of resources. How ridiculous was it that on the one hand, Nehemiah was buying people back, and then the rich were just selling them off again? How ridiculous was that? His anger was absolutely right. It was absolutely spot on. What was going on was wrong. It was a sin. It was something that God himself was so opposed to. It absolutely flew in the face of the blueprint that God had given the Jewish people for life in their community. In the Old Testament, when God spoke about how his people should live, he specifically talks about how a Jew should lend money to another Jew. In Exodus, we read, "If you lend money to one of my people among you who is needy, do not be like a moneylender. Charge him no interest." And in Leviticus, it says, if one of your countrymen becomes poor and is unable to support himself among you, help him as you would an alien or a temporary resident, so he can continue to live among you. Don't take interest of any kind from him, but fear your God, so your countrymen may continue to live among you. You must not lend him money at interest or sell him food at profit. If one of your countrymen becomes poor among you and sells himself to you, do not make him work as a slave. He's to be treated as a hired worker or a temporary resident among you. He's to work for you until the year of Jubilee. Then he and his children are to be released, and he will go back to his own clan and to the property of his forefathers. Nehemiah was angry at what he saw within his community, and rightly so, because the richest and the most powerful in that Jewish community were doing community life completely and utterly wrong. And actually, we too should get angry when we see within our own church, within our own worshipping communities, people not being treated properly. We should be angry when those who are the most vulnerable are not being supported or looked after well. But, like Nehemiah, we must confront that conflict in a godly manner. And like Nehemiah, we must appeal to what the Bible has got to say. And the great thing is, when we face conflict in any setting, within or outside of the church, we do have a biblical framework to help us resolve conflict and discord and to confront opposition and deal with it. Like Nehemiah, we can ace these difficult situations too. ACE is my acronym for helping us remember how Nehemiah tackled the opposition that he was facing from within this wall-building community. The first thing is assess the situation. In verse 7, Nehemiah says, "So I thought it over." So I thought it over. In the easy-to-read version of the Bible, it says, "So I calmed myself down." Nehemiah shows us that a good leader, a good person of influence, thinks about a situation before responding. Nehemiah recognizes he needs God's advice on how to handle this situation. He needs God's wisdom to know what to say and what to do. Nehemiah shows us the importance of self-control. Nehemiah wasn't ready to take any action until he'd calmed down. So I wonder today, what injustices we're angry about? What injustices might be making our blood boil? I wonder what challenges we're facing that make us feel emotionally vulnerable. Do we need to assess our situation and wait until we have calmed down, until we've found that place of inner peace and settledness within our souls? I know, looking back over my life, I've always seen a better outcome to any conflict that I've ever faced when I have calmed down, assessed the situation before wading in. I wonder whether that's true for us here too. So the first thing to ace it is to assess the situation. The second thing to ace it is to confront the situation. Once Nehemiah was calm, he was ready to act. He confronted the situation by challenging the wrongdoers directly and face to face. The situation that he did this in, the circumstance, was a public meeting because the sin that he was confronting was a publicly known sin. In other situations, we might well have a more private conversation first as our particular stance to take. Now, I don't know about you, but if you're anything like me, you hate confrontation. I do. When I know there's trouble brewing, when I know there's something that I need to hit head on, I would much prefer to wait and hope against hope that the problem will just somehow miraculously go away. But experience tells me it rarely does. And actually often, the longer we let a situation continue, the worse it gets. Nehemiah shows us that as soon as he was emotionally ready to tackle the situation, he deals with it straight away. And this is good practice for us too, even if we find it extremely difficult. Because if we feel that we're being opposed, if we feel that people are letting us down, if we don't deal with it as soon as we're calm enough to, it festers within it. And it's extremely difficult for us to continue to exercise that self-control. Jesus gives us this example. If your brother sins against you, go and show him his fault just between the two of you. If he listens, you've won your brother over. But if he will not listen, take one or two others along so that every matter may be established by the testimony of two or three witnesses. If he still refuses to listen, tell it to the church. And if he refuses to listen, even to the church, treat him as you would a pagan or a tax collector. The big question is, how did Jesus tell us to treat the pagan or the tax collector? He says, love them and pray for them. Our purpose when we're dealing with opposition, biblically, is to ensure that we do everything we can to restore unity and to restore relationship. That always needs to be our desired outcome, because this is what Jesus tells us to do. It's not about winning the fight. So to ace this kind of internal opposition and conflict, we need to assess the situation. We need to confront the situation. We then need to expect a godly response to the situation. You see, when Nehemiah confronts these rich and wealthy Jews and he says, put the things that you've done wrong right, those Jews repent. They responded to this biblical challenge. In verse 12 we read, the leaders answered, we will do whatever you say and return their property without asking to be repaid. That's remarkable. They repented. They put right the wrongdoings around their behaviour. And I find it remarkable because in my experience, and I'm sure it's true in yours, sometimes when we confront people, when we confront sin, when we confront wrongdoing, we don't always receive quite the same favourable outcome. I'm convinced that part of Nehemiah's response was that he did this in a calm frame of mind. And I'm sure it's partly because he confronted it as soon as he heard about it and endeavoured to put it right. But I also think there is something in the way that he confronts this that is extremely important for us to understand, hear, and reflect. He says, what you have done is wrong. He tells them that they are sinning against the community and against God. But he then goes on to say, we must honour God by the way we live so the Gentiles can't find fault with us. You have done wrong, tells them they are sinners, but we reminds them that they're not the enemy here. He and these rich Jews and the poor Jews, they're all part of the same community and therefore they're all on the same side. Nehemiah could have said, you must honour God by the way you live. But that would have been belittling language. I wonder whether we've used that kind of language when we're trying to deal with a conflict or facing opposition. The kind of domineering language which puts somebody else down. Nehemiah could have said, call yourself a Jew. But he chooses not to use that kind of divisive language. And I wonder whether we've ever used such excluding language when we feel that there are Christians working against us. And I wonder when we feel the challenge of opposition, whether we actually expect a godly outcome to the situation, or have we already presumed and assumed the worst. To ace it, when we face opposition, we need to assess the situation and submit ourselves to God. We need to confront the situation, appealing to how God says we should behave towards one another. Finally, we should expect that those we are confronting will care when their behaviours are hurting the community or someone else. We should expect those we're confronting will care about the damage it's doing to the wider Christian community or church. We should expect that those we are confronting actually are wanting to honour good and honour God by the way that they live. If we expect the very best from people, if we use the language that draws out the very best in people, we should expect that the best responses will be seen in our community life. Because when we are expecting the best, we are adopting the stance which clearly communicates our goal, which is that of restoring unity and restoring relationship in community life. Our stance is not about winning the battle or coming out top on the fight. Paul was wanting to clear the paperwork away, and I was struck as we were singing one of our songs by some of the words that we just sang. And I now need to find them. Our God is a lion, the Lion of Judah. He's roaring in power and fighting our battles. When we face opposition, when we face confrontation, when we face the challenges that make us feel completely alone, yes, we assess the situation. Yes, we confront the situation. Yes, we expect a godly response in that situation. But we also remember God is roaring in power and fighting our battles with us and for us. We are not alone. And when we become a worshiping community, and we have challenges and we fight, you know, we find ourselves not always agreeing with each other, which is healthy and normal and the way of community life. What we do is we remember we're not alone. God is with us, and we, each of us, are on the same side. The side we are on is the Lord's side, and He will fight our battles with us and for us. We don't have to feel that the responsibility for winning, for pushing through, for getting things to the place that we believe is biblically right is about me or about you, or even necessarily about us. It is done with us each holding onto the hand of Jesus, knowing that God is with us, fighting those battles alongside us. And our community and shared goals is always for unity and restoration of relationships. So this morning, I wonder, are there relational fracture lines in our community life? Are there steps that we need to be taking to restore unity with a brother or a sister within this life? And are there injustices within our community that we see need to be corrected? Do we need to be taking a stand calmly, but confronting the situation, expecting for the right thing to come out of those conversations? Are you facing a situation that you need to ace this week? We're going to spend a few moments just praying and reflecting before God. Thinking about people that we may not be in full and good relationship with. Thinking, do we need to assess that situation? Do we need to confront that situation? And do we have the courage to expect the very best out of that situation? Seeing the good in the other so that unity and restored relationship are brought back to life.